And good morning. This is Tuesday, June 16th. Can you believe it? It's a halfway through the month of June, and you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez.
And I'm your co-host, Susie. I'm Chris Bessler.
Nice to see you, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have guest Susan Drumhiller from the Idaho Conservation League here in the studios this morning. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And we're here to talk about very important issues around coal oil trains this time. Mm-hmm. So, but first, what should we do?
Well let's hear the weather, Susie. You're an expert at the weather.
I do.
At
the
least
weather.
Telling the weather, yeah.
Okay, from the National Weather Service, we have currently 61 degrees. Today, mostly sunny with highs near 82, calm winds becoming southwest 5 to 8 miles per hour in the afternoon. Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 52, southwest winds 5 to 7 miles per hour becoming calm in the evening. Wednesday, and it looks like we have a 20% chance of thunderstorms. Highs 81 and Wednesday night lows 50. And do you want to know anything more than that?
That sounds pretty good.
Does that sound good enough?
Yeah, it sounds really nice, yeah. We had sunrise this morning at 4:44 a.m., and sunset tonight will be at 8:49 p.m. That means we've gained 8 minutes of daylight in the past week, but that phenomenon is about to end because the summer solstice is this Sunday. It's June 21st, and that's the time at which the sun reaches its northernmost point relative to the equator. It's the longest day of the year. So we'll officially be into summer. The downside of that is the days will start getting a little bit shorter from here on until next December.
It's one of those days where you're really happy because it is the longest day because we love the light. But it's also on the other side, it's like life. You know there's another thing coming. And yeah. It's now we're going to get shorter. Not right away, but slowly, but surely.
It'll slowly start to get a little bit shorter, but we got a great summer ahead of us, and that weather report you just gave us is proof of that. Lake level is at 2062.22 feet. It's basically at full summer pool now, and it'll probably stay there until we get till just about October, I think. And other things going on around town, as usual, there's a lot of events happening here in town. The Chafe 150 happens on Saturday. That's the big bike ride, 150-mile bike ride from City Beach into Montana, down the Bull River Valley, and then back.
And we've had those folks in the studio quite a bit leading up to it, and all of a sudden, it's here.
It's here, yeah, and it's really quite a ride. You do not have to do the 150-mile ride. They have an 80-mile ride and a 30-mile ride, and the money they raise in this is put on by the Rotary Club. It assists families with children that have autism. Mm-hmm. So it's a worthwhile cause.
I just want to kind of go backwards to last weekend. It was only on Friday and Saturday, actually. KRFY hosted their annual membership drive at the former Coldwater Creek storefront. And it was a success. It was really fun to have people stop in. We had created two sound studios, one for music. We had lots of music. And then interviews with our community members. So that was fun, and we want to thank everyone who helped make this possible, the annual membership drive, a success.
Yeah, it was really cool, by the way. Tons of different bands came in and played.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fun to listen to it. It's very fun to actually be here and see a bit of it as well. One thing, glitch that happened, it wasn't actually a glitch on the part of the member drive, but we lost power after, 3 hours, the whole downtown went black on, mm-hmm. That was on Friday about
7:15.
You would know.
Well, yeah. Because our 7 o'clock band, Heartbreak Pass, was just started. They were into their second song of their set, and we all just stood there. Somebody checked their smartphone, said that it's permanent, or at least it's a long-term outage. So they took all their instruments, a stand-up bass and a guitar and a mandolin, and went outside and
played on the
music
street.
On the street for an hour.
Yeah.
So it was really fun.
That was probably a treat for the people that were wandering around downtown.
Yeah, we had a little crowd there.
You know, making lemonade out of lemons when you have a power outage. The power outage was caused by a transformer malfunction at the Pine Street transformer station. It knocked out just about the whole downtown.
All right.
But that's some of the things that happened last week, and we'll hopefully get into more events coming on up this week, because as usual, there's like a couple dozen things happening in town this week. Sandpoint, Idaho, our hometown. But for now, we want to talk with Susan Drumheller. She's with the Idaho Conservation League, and the topic today is oil trains, because there's a forum on the oil train issue coming up this Wednesday, June 24th. It'll be 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Heartwood Center.
That's next Wednesday.
That's next Wednesday. Yep.
There you
Excuse
go.
Excuse me. I'm jumping ahead.
Clarifying.
That's good.
You know, I know that we all are aware of the fact that we live in a town that is a funnel for trains. And this forum is going to focus on the oil trains. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, last time I was in the studio, we talked about the Coal Road to China film that we were going to show. That was in May. And that was well attended. People seemed really interested in it. We were really focusing on the coal trains at that time. But this time we wanted to focus more on the oil trains. And this is actually one of a series of forums that's occurring around the Pacific Northwest. And the headliner for it is Eric DePlace from the Sightline Institute. He is the policy director there, and he's considered an expert on the transport of coal and oil through the Pacific Northwest. Sightline Institute is a think tank kind of organization based in Seattle, and their focus is sustainability. And Eric's done a lot of reporting and work on this issue. He's written a report, multiple reports about these issues, and he does a blog. So we're really thrilled to have him here. The night before, he's going to be speaking in Spokane at a forum there. That's Tuesday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. That's going to be at the Gonzaga University School of Law courtroom. So if you happen to be in Spokane Tuesday and can't make our forum on Wednesday next week, you can catch him the night before. So yeah, we're really thrilled to have him here. We're also going to have Jen Wallace. She is she's with the International Steering Committee. Well, she's the International Steering Committee co-chair of the Railroad Workers United. And this is sort of an umbrella union for a number of different trade unions that work for the railroads. And she's a conductor for BNSF. And so we'll get a unique perspective from her about, safety and worker issues related to oil trains.
You say she's a conductor for Burlington Northern Santa Fe.
Yes.
Do freight trains have conductors?
Yes. Yes. Oh. Right now there's an engineer and a conductor. So the conductor is kind of in charge of all the cars. The engineer's in charge of driving the train.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the issues that's been out there is a proposal to go to one-man crews, and the unions have been opposed to that.
Just an engineer?
Just an engineer and no conductor, yes. Oh. So that's been a big issue.
It seems ill-advised.
Yes, yes, I would say so.
Just such a huge vehicle moving along and having an extra pair of hands and eyes and mind on board seems advisable from a safety standpoint.
Yeah, so I think she's going to provide a real interesting perspective.
I don't know if you're versed on the Railroad Workers United position on oil trains, but do they have concerns about safety as well as these towns do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to speak for them, so yeah.
Come to the forum. Hear that viewpoint. Yeah.
It's really great. This is a co-produced by the Lake Ponderay Waterkeepers and Idaho Conservation League.
Sightline Institute. They're also co-sponsoring, yes.
And they're out of Spokane.
Seattle.
So that's very, I think it's good to see different environmental groups come together. I know that you and Shannon, who was going to be here today from the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, are really working hard on this issue. Because do you see this as extremely important for us to be at least informed about, if not anything else?
Yeah, I think so. And, this is something that's just come up in the last few short years. It's sort of a new issue for us. And, I wanted to point out that just a few years ago, there was no Bakken crude oil traveling on our rail lines through here. Back in 2011, there was virtually none. And then in 2013, there were 714 million gallons being transported nationwide. And they're expecting it to get close to 3 billion gallons being transported by the end of, like, this year. So, and that's not all through.
Not all coming through,
not
here,
all
though,
through
yeah.
here, but a lot of it is coming through here. Back in January, I think we had reached a peak where we were having 18 to 21 fully loaded Bakken crude oil trains coming through on a weekly basis. And now I think we're back down to 16. We're not really sure because they don't actually have to disclose that information anymore.
So that boils down to two or three a day currently coming through.
Yeah, maybe one to two now. And, mm-hmm. and then there were, like, you know, maybe three a day mm-hmm. In January. But, you know, with the oil prices dropping, they had to kind of ratchet back production in the Bakken. So we're not getting quite as much. So I think as prices, you know, when prices go up, mm-hmm. you know, there's just, and then if a number of transportation terminals and refineries are developed on the West Coast, that could ratchet up the transport of oil through here as well.
Are any of those refineries on the coast still in decision-making mode as far as being increased or upgraded or whatever?
Yeah, actually, there are a number of them. There's numerous proposals, and some of them are for refineries. Some of them are for terminals that would move oil. And another thing I should mention is the oil industry is trying to get our export ban lifted. Right now we have an export ban on oil, so we can
only export to a particular country, like China,
export or? Out of our country.
Oh, okay.
So right now
okay.
all the oil we produce in our country is supposed to be consumed
within our country.
Mm-hmm. But because there's been such a boom in oil production because of fracking, mm-hmm. They are trying to get that export ban lifted so that they have more markets, right?
Mm-hmm. When you say they are trying to get
the industry.
And is there a name to the group? Or when you say the industry, this is a coalition of oil producing.
The petroleum producers. Mm-hmm. And I know they have a name for their association, okay. and I just don't have
so
it off the tip of
my head. All the big oil companies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there are, right now, there are 6 different terminals or refineries seeking permits, and these are all in the state of Washington. There are other terminals and refineries that exist, and that's where the oil is going now. And the largest terminal to be proposed is the Tesoro Savage one, or it's also called Vancouver Energy, and that would be in Vancouver, Washington, and it could handle 360,000 barrels per day of oil. So that would be a huge one. And they are going through the environmental impact statement process right now. And we expect a public comment period to open up here this summer. And they're actually going to have a public hearing in Spokane on that one. And so one of the reasons for this forum is we want to get people educated on these issues. I mean, it can be kind of complex. And so we thought bringing Eric DePlace in from Sightline Institute, people would really gain a deeper and better understanding of these proposals mm-hmm. so that maybe we can get some people to come with us to the hearing in Spokane when it's held.
So, Susan, can you frame up what the issues of concern are for Sandpoint with these oil trains coming through?
Oh, well, thank you, Chris, because let's get back to why we're doing this.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a number of concerns. And basically, there are a lot of risks associated with these trains. And one of the biggest issues for us is that Idaho has to absorb all these risks, you know, and we don't get any of the benefits, whereas the oil-producing state and the state that is
has the refineries, the ports, yes.
they get some kind of financial benefit from this, I suppose. But we get nothing. We're just sort of the pass-through area. And these trains all come right down through Sandpoint, through Rathdrum, over the Rathdrum Prairie. You know, of course, we're concerned about the safety issues. There's been about 10 dramatic derailments that involve fire and explosions in the last 2 years. And in fact, we're almost on the anniversary of the really big one, the Lac Mégantic disaster in Quebec, Canada. It was 2 years ago in July. I think it was July 6th. And 47 people were killed when a train, it was sort of a runaway train situation, and it derailed near downtown, destroyed the downtown, killed all those people, and they still cannot occupy their downtown. It's so contaminated. They've had to move the downtown elsewhere, and it polluted their river. So that's another issue for us, of course.
Huge safety issue for us, because those trains do come right through our downtown.
And historically, have we ever had derailments here in our area of a freight, from a freight train?
Oh, yeah, there's derailments.
We've had a whole bunch of derailments. We haven't had any right in town that I can recall, but...
No, but there was a derailment not too long ago along the Kootenai River. You know, these trains, most of the oil trains travel on the BNSF main line, and they go along the Kootenai River. They come right through downtown Bonner's Ferry, which is a real concern for Bonner's Ferry. Mm-hmm. You know, all their emergency services, their dispatch center, everything, their fire department is right there downtown, right next to the tracks. They've got schools right next to the tracks. You know, they're really concerned about it. Then they come down here, and as you know, it crosses Lake Ponderay on the bridge. And then it crosses the Rathdrum Prairie. And, you know, people have been concerned for years about the refueling depot there. It almost didn't get approved because of concerns about spills, over the prairie. Now we have more potential for spills over the prairie and contamination of the aquifer, which serves 500,000 people.
Yeah, the whole Spokane region. I can recall several derailments that have occurred since I've been living around here in the last 30 years, particularly up around Bonner's Ferry. And in fact, in I think it was about 92 or so, the entire railroad trestle crossing the Kootenai River collapsed and put the whole train into the river. It was an aging wood trestle, and they've since replaced it. I assume the new trestle is good, but it just goes to show that these kind of things happen. And had that been an oil train, I mean, that could have been a disaster.
Yeah, and there was a report that just came to light a few months ago that the Department of Transportation did, and they were extrapolating on, you know, what they could expect in terms of derailments with these Bakken Oil crude trains as well as ethanol. And they're predicting 10 derailments of these trains per year, you know.
Somewhere down the line.
Somewhere.
Specifically oil trains?
Or ethanol trains. These, like, highly volatile trains, and they predict a certain number of deaths and, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of damage. So it's a real concern, and they did respond by creating some new rules.
Mm-hmm. I just want to remind our listeners that this is 88.5 KRFY, and you're listening to The Morning Show. We have Chris Bessler and myself are the hosts, and we have Susan Drumhiller from the Idaho Conservation League here to talk about oil trains and an event that's coming up that invites our citizens to be informed, because information, as we know, can help at least bring light to an issue. And again, tell us about this event, and then I want to get to another question that I have.
So okay.
We've been talking about the potential and the possibility and the probability of derailments.
Mm-hmm.
There's another question.
So just a few details about the forum. The Oil Train Forum is going to be from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th, and it's going to be at the Heartwood Center. Doors open at 5, free admission. We'll have some light refreshments because it's like right after work, and if you're like me, you need a little bit of sustenance to get through the early part of the evening. And we've got four panelists, Eric DePlace from the Sightline Institute, an expert on oil and coal transport through the Pacific Northwest, Jen Wallace with Railroad Workers United, Ron Stocking, our Sandpoint Fire Chief, and Shannon Williamson, who's the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper. And this is presented by Idaho Conservation League, Sightline Institute, and Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper.
Okay, so that's next Wednesday, June 24th. Now, the Sandpoint Fire Chief will be attending as well. I'm sure that he will be addressing what kind of preparedness the city can have in the event a disaster should occur.
Yeah, that's our hope, and the city is working on an evacuation plan. They're also participating with Bonner County, the EPA, Department of Environmental Quality, BNSF, and other entities on practicing a full-scale disaster if, you know, the scenario is how do we respond to an oil train derailment near City Beach? And so they're going to be doing a tabletop exercise this summer, and then in the fall they will be doing a full-scale exercise and practicing on the water.
I'd say one concerning factor would be that if it were a disaster as big as happened in Quebec, that Bonner General Health, the hospital, is right across Sand Creek from where the train's coming through, and it could actually take our emergency care out of commission.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff along the railroad tracks. We live in a railroad community, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I personally really like trains. I mean, they are a really efficient way to transport goods and people. And I guess what we're concerned about is this unprecedented increase in the volume of hazardous materials being transported through our community, and the fact that we have no real way of addressing our concerns and the impacts and mitigating for that.
I know that some people have said, and probably the industry is who I'm talking about, well, we're going to create, and they have, these stronger walled or double walled oil cars. But in fact, a lot of the derailments that have happened, even last year, were these double-walled cars, and some of them did blow up, I think in North Dakota or somewhere out there. So do you feel that the steps that the industry is taking to make it safer for these rolling bombs to be transported across and through towns and all over the place, these double-walled are really the answer?
Well, what's interesting is that BNSF was going to, on their own, they were going to purchase and start swapping out tanker cars. I can't remember how many it was, but they made an announcement over a year ago that they were going to upgrade their tanker cars. And basically, they have said, oh, well, those plans are now on hold. And what happened recently in this spring, the Department of Transportation, Federal Department of Transportation, passed new rules for tank car standards. And the industry actually sued over them because they thought they were too stringent. Meanwhile, you know, environmental groups, you know, there's a big coalition of environmental groups working on these issues, sued saying that they're not stringent enough. And so basically, the new tank car standards require thicker shells, jackets, thermal protection, upgraded pressure relief valves, rollover protection, and other fittings and things like that, as well as, I believe it's called the positive train control, you know, the braking system. And, well, they call it state-of-the-art ECP braking system. So that's, it's a good thing. Industry wanted to have the shells no thicker than 7/16 of an inch. The rule does require thicker shells, but the retrofitted cars don't have to go to that higher standard. So that's a concern of ours. It should have, and it also doesn't apply to all tanker cars. It's interesting that the rules only apply to trains that have 35 or more tank cars loaded with hazardous materials like this. The high hazard flammable trains only apply to trains that have either a continuous block of 20 or more tank cars loaded with a flammable liquid or 35 or more tank cars loaded with a flammable liquid dispersed throughout the train. And for instance, we've got some trains that are mixed that would fall under that standard. So those could still be in the old DOT 111 substandard cars.
And if they wanted to get around it, they could just
Disperse them.
Yeah, disperse them.
Is this the kind of information we're going to hear about at the event at the Heartwood Center on the 24th?
Yeah. We'll get more information about that, probably go into more detail. Mm-hmm. There's other things about the rule that concerns us. There's a 40-mile-per-hour speed limit in high-threat urban areas for these trains. But again, that only applies to certain trains. And then once the cars meet the new tank standards or are retrofitted, there's no speed limit anymore. And it certainly doesn't apply to us. We're not an urban area. Mm-hmm. There's just a handful of these high-risk urban areas. This category only applies to a few dozen cities around the nation.
Mm. Is Spokane one of them?
I don't think so.
Okay, but, so they circumvent Spokane. They must...
Well, no, all the trains that will go through Spokane. Yeah, I mean, it's a speed limit that only applies in certain really highly dense populated areas.
Yeah. And Spokane may not.
So we don't have a speed limit. There's other questions too. And
so slower speed can mitigate some potential derailment.
Well, yeah. And also, if it does derail, it's not at a high speed. Mm-hmm. And if you've got these thicker walled tank cars, it's less likely to rupture.
So that's one solution that a small town like Sandpoint or Bonner's Ferry can work towards is reducing the speed as they're coming through our communities.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I mean, it's not a rule that a city can impose on a railroad.
Mm-hmm. But the federal government could.
The federal government could. Yes. And that's why we're concerned that these rules aren't strong enough. Mm-hmm.
So we really only have a few minutes left, but we've been talking about safety concerns, which are paramount. But there's also environmental concerns with the oil trains as well. Can you articulate some of those?
Well, I mean, I think one of our biggest concerns is that there could potentially be a derailment and an oil spill, and that would be devastating if it were to happen, in our waterways or over our aquifers. So, of course, we're really concerned about that. I mean, you can clean up some of it, but not all of it, and that's going to have really devastating effects on, aquatic species, as well as, drinking water supplies for people. So that's probably our paramount concern. There's also just with the increase in train traffic in general, there's air quality issues for people who live near the tracks. And we haven't talked about coal trains at all, but in combination with coal trains, we're looking at a potential doubling of our train traffic through this area. And that's going to be a pretty significant impact, especially for people who live along the tracks, not to mention people who are trying to get from point A to point B and have to cross, the train tracks somewhere.
Coming through now to stop traffic.
And certainly the city of Sandpoint has concerns about emergency services and being able to serve the northern part of the city because Boyer Avenue, sometimes these trains cross that crossing quite slowly, mm-hmm. and it can be a long wait time.
Yeah, I have to cross Boyer on my way to work. Come down Boyer. I can testify sometimes the trains. Yes, in fact, yesterday I gave up waiting and drove through Ponderé to come in because the train was just parked there.
So. Yeah. Well, and so. Then you look at say, Ponder Point. They have one entrance and one exit. I mean, there's only one way in and out of that neighborhood.
They don't have two egresses in and out.
Yeah, there's only one way to get in and out. So that's a big concern for them. Mm-hmm. I noticed Bottle Bay Road is being blocked a lot by trains. It's a busy crossing. Mm-hmm. And if there's to be any improvements of these crossings, the at-grade crossings, basically the railroads don't have to pay for any of that. Mm-hmm. If they close an at-grade crossing and replace it with an overpass or an underpass, they may have to pay up to 5% of that. But the costs all fall on the taxpayers, And that's one thing that we feel is not fair with these proposals. And, you know, that could generate more train traffic. If they want to build refineries and terminals that are going to increase the train traffic through here, we think that they should also be paying for some of this infrastructure in the communities all along the tracks.
That's right. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we bear the cost.
Exactly.
And we don't see the kind of direct economic benefit that these other areas have. We are about out of time for this segment. We do have another guest coming in just a few minutes. But I did want to throw out, you know, there's kind of the bigger environmental issue, which is climate change and the continued use and reliance on fossil fuels and how that's contributing to it. Is that part of the discussion here with oil trains?
Yeah. You know, I mean, and I'm not going to hide the fact that that's part of the reason that I'm motivated by this, not to mention the fact that I live in the blast zone because I live close to, you know, the main line where the oil trains are going. So I have, you know, a very personal stake in that, but also a very personal stake in the state of our climate. And I don't think that we should be trafficking dirty fossil fuels. You know, I think we need to start looking at alternatives. And so that's one reason why, I feel really good about working on this issue. Like I said, I like trains. They're a really efficient way to move goods and materials. But we're talking about a huge increase in moving oil and coal through our neighborhoods.
There was an interesting thing. It's kind of a corollary thing, but it has to do with climate change, that scientists this week issued what they're terming a dire warning to UN climate negotiators about a global warming cycle that is it's melting the permafrost, and it's creating this cycle where the warmer it gets, the faster the permafrost melts. That releases a lot of carbon that's been locked away in the permafrost. And the warning they're giving is that, this could actually double the rate of carbon entry into the atmosphere. And so we're starting to see effects that have been actually predicted for 30, 40 years or more that seem to be actually coming to pass now, which is, I'd say, alarming for people that are concerned about the long-term health of the planet.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a frightening time in some ways.
Yep. I think tomorrow there's a letter coming out by a leader of a large group of people. And I think that's going to has the potential to make a difference, because those are not, I'll just say it's the Pope of the Catholic Church is coming out with an encyclical, which is pretty big deal. And I think it's worth reading. Anyone worth reading that?
Yeah,
that's
actually already been leaked. The New York Times had a story
leaked, will be the official
version.
And the
Pope is actually raising concerns about,
the moral implications of what we're doing
moral
to this planet
and
into the future.
The requirements that we need to be stewards of our planet.
Yep. So we have a perfect opportunity. Being informed is an important part of having a voice. And Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper and Idaho Conservation League and the other group,
Sightline Institute out of Seattle,
will be hosting an event on the 24th. And it's at the Heartwood Center from 5:30 to 7:30. And it's called Oil Train Forum. So it's open to the public. It's another opportunity. And we certainly thank both Idaho Conservation League and our own Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, along with Site Institute, for putting this on.
And you can get more information about this at idahoconservation.org. There's more details on the event, as well as the KRFY calendars.
That's right.
So you can get informed, but this is an event coming next Wednesday, June 24th.
Another opportunity. And Susan, thank you so much for coming in and giving us more information about this event and issues that concern our citizens here in our own community.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We are going to be right back with Suzanne Davis. She's the children's librarian at the East Bonner County Library, and she's going to come in and talk to us about a children's writing camp that's coming up. We're going to take a musical break. This is Freight Train, written by Elizabeth Cotton, but performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary. We'll be right back. And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary, Freight Train.
And we're back now with Suzanne Davis. She's the children's librarian at the East Bonner County Library. Hi, Suzanne. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to be talking about the children's writing camp that's coming up. It's a creative writing camp that's coming next, looks like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah.
It'll be at the Sandpoint Library. It'll be 1 to 4 p.m. each day, and it's for students in grades 5 through 12 who live in Bonner County. Can you tell us where does this writing camp come from, and what kinds of things will the students be doing?
Okay, well, the library's been working with Lost Horse Press on events for a number of years, and we've held some writing programs over the years. They've generally been on Fridays and Saturdays in the springtime, but we decided to try something different this year. I hope we picked the week that kids are just getting a little tired of doing nothing at home and ready to do something else. So that was why we picked the dates we did. And that's the kind of the background. And it comes out of a grant from the Marilyn Robinson Foundation.
Oh, really?
Young Writers Fund.
So what kind of activities will the kids do?
Well, we have three instructors. They're all MFA students, a Master's of Fine Arts in Writing students. Two of them are from Eastern Washington University, and the other one lives here in town and is doing the, creative writing over online creative writing. And the topics that we're going to focus on this year are memoir writing, slam poetry, which is, that's not like slamming people. It's performance poetry is what it is. Fractured fairy tales, flash fiction, and I'm missing one thing. Nature writing. So that's our get out and move around a little bit. And Japanese stab book bindings. So we're covering quite a few things. Yeah.
Cool. So you actually get into book manufacture a little bit.
Yeah. And that's
kind of a craft.
Christine's specialty, as a publisher, right. She finds writers. She's not a writer, but then she presents their writing in a way that makes it look beautiful.
Yes.
And so that's, she's going to be the one teaching the binding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned one of the types of writing their kids are going to be doing. Well, one is slam poetry.
Uh-huh.
Now, slam poetry is the kids write something that basically they're touched by emotionally.
It's performance poetry, and there's some really great slam poetry online. It's spoken word poetry, and has a lot of emotion in it. It's generally about something that you feel very, very strongly about. So it probably wouldn't necessarily be about trees unless you were saving the trees from something.
Right. Yeah. Some people feel that strongly about trees.
Yes, there are, but it wouldn't be that.
We've had some trees go down around town. Actually, I can think of that people got very upset about when the trees came down. Just individual trees.
Talking about the storm last year.
Well, the storm was part of it, but there have been some trees that have been removed for progress, if you will.
Yeah, so. Over near the Ponderay.
I can remember a big old willow tree that was at the corner of Boyer and Larch when they redid that, put the roundabout in, it came down. And there were some folks from that neighborhood that were very attached to it. It was about like a 3-foot diameter. Anyways, that's just an example of something that could be a subject for slam poetry.
It could be if they have the strong emotion behind it. But if you're just talking about the beauty of a tree, it wouldn't be slam poetry.
Not necessarily, right.
Yeah. Right. It tends to be kind of political. So the political nature of trees coming down, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And then you mentioned fractured fairy tales. What is that?
So fractured fairy tales. So if you were to come into the library and check out a story about The Three Little Pigs is a great example. I am not sure I have a single copy of The Three Little Pigs as it is the original fairy tale. Everything's been changed, so it's like I have a copy of The Three Little Wolves and The Big Bad Pig, and I have a copy of The Three Little Gorditos, or like, you know, so it's like taking a fairy tale and changing it, but keeping the general sense of what happens. For Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I have the three polar bears by Jan Brett. It takes place in the Arctic, and so it's just changing a fairy tale, making something go slightly different. So that's kind of a focus for the younger kids, and then the older kids, like the teens, would be doing flash fiction, which is telling a story, sometimes in as few as 6 words, and an entire story, and then other times maybe a paragraph as an entire story.
So. And I think the Sandpoint Reader did a fiction issue about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they were encouraging people to send in what you would consider flash fiction, because they had to be very short, just a couple hundred word stories. Yeah, and there were some very creative endeavors in that issue of the Sandpoint Reader, which actually you could go back and look up online. They have their issues online at sandpointreader.com. Just happened to remember that. So registration is required.
Yes.
So when do people need to get registered by?
The sooner you register, the better, because we will, you know, close it at 35 students. So you want to guarantee your spot. And you can do that by calling me and just registering with me over the phone. It's not a complicated registration process. So you can just call me at the library.
That number?
It's 263-6930. Extension 1211, or you can also email me at suzanne@ebonnerlibrary.org. There's also registration applications on our website. You can print that up and bring it in.
Yeah, and that's ebonnerlibrary.org, or you can just Google East Bonner County Library and find the library website that way.
You could, yes.
So where'd the idea for the Creative Writing Summer Camp come from? Was that generated by the library? Did Lost Horse Press bring the idea forward?
Well, like I said, we've had this grant, and we've done writing programs in the past. And the whole all-day-long Saturday things, we've had some difficulty getting people to really commit to that. So there's camps for everything, and I just said to Christine, well, why don't we try a camp? And We'd never done that before, and so far we've had a really great response to that. So we're excited.
I know in all grade levels, and this is grade 5 through 12,
yes,
there are students that love to write, and they just find that in themselves. I see it all the time at the school I work at. And this gives them an opportunity to get a little bit deeper into it, a little bit more focus, and have fun with other writers.
Yeah.
So this is June 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the East Bonner County Library main branch.
Yeah, and can I add one thing? So on the 25th, the instructional portion ends at 4 p.m., but then students who are registered will have a little pizza party or taco party or something, and then at 5 o'clock, they have the opportunity to read something they've written for their parents and a public audience in the entry hall of the library. So you're welcome to join us for that. But I don't want that to keep anyone from registering. You're not required to read anything.
Okay.
You can be just a participant in the writing without reading. We'd love to hear your reading.
But this is a way for the public to engage and come and hear what the students come up with.
It is. Yeah. We have some amazing young people in this community who have some, you know, amazing writing that they've done.
And that will be 5 p.m. on June 25th, approximately,
it will be.
Public reading will occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 5 p.m. And then you can stay for our science show from the Mobius Science Center, because we have a ton going on at the library.
So you're a children's librarian, and with the, you know, kind of the changing culture and kids going so much to the screens, Are you seeing kids engaging with reading? Have you noticed a change occurring?
Well, I think our schools are doing an amazing job of teaching reading, and I think that kids are actually much better readers today than maybe I was when I was a young kid. I think that it's been democratized so that more kids are better readers earlier. I don't know that statistics show that we have a bigger readership as adults as a result of that, but I know that from a young age that there are probably better readers in general today than there were at my age. I don't think I read my first chapter book till I was in third grade, and I have kindergartners coming in reading chapter books.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
So,
so what are some of the popular books that young people are reading?
Well, it depends on what age you are and your interest. Magic Treehouse has been popular for quite a while. And that's, you know, probably one of the first full chapter books kids do, mm-hmm. kindergarten, first grade-ish. Spirit Animals is a new series out of Scholastic that has several mm-hmm. different authors. That's very popular, and I'm always amazed by how popular Harry Potter continues to be. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I was just watching Harry Potter movie the other night, but
yeah, actually, I think we're probably all fans now at this stage of the game. In reading is a great way to get kids interested in writing. It's the first step to getting them interested in writing, I think.
It is. Yeah. I like to talk to parents about the different vocabularies that we have. You know, mm-hmm. as babies, babies have a listening vocabulary that's much higher than their speaking vocabulary. And so if they haven't heard a word, they're never going to say it. And our speaking vocabulary is much higher than our reading vocabulary. Mm-hmm. If we can't say a word, we're not going to read it. Our reading vocabulary is much higher than our writing vocabulary. So you're not going to become a great writer if you don't do a lot of reading. You just won't have the vocabulary and the grammar and the syntax to do it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's modeling, basically, that you learn how to write from reading a whole lot of different types of literature. So we're talking about the Creative Writing Summer Camp. It's coming next week, June 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the East Bonner County Library, 1 to 4 p.m. each day. And you do need to register in advance. So, Suzanne,
and that's for students grade 5 yes. through 12.
And yes. that's incoming 5th through 12th okay. graders, incoming so not outgoing.
And so again, if they want to get in touch with you to register, how do they do that?
They would call the library 263-6930, extension 1211. Or you can email me at Suzanne, which is S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, at E as in East Bonner Library.org.
Or Google it. If you find the library, and you'll find information on the website.
You will. Yeah. There's a registration sheet on there, but you don't need to fill that out. You can just call me. Mm-hmm. It's a quick okay. registration process.
And I will add, I believe this is, pretty sure this is in the KRFY calendar, so you could go out to KRFY.org and find information about this and a link to more information.
Via Sandpoint Online.
The calendars come from right. Sandpoint Online, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We have a bit more coming up on the KRFY Morning Show. Suzanne, thank you very much. You're welcome. And we're going to take a little musical break. It's the Beatles, Paperback Writer. And it's just an accident. I didn't even plan this. And we'll be right back.
Paperback Writer.
And that was the Beatles, Paperback Writer. And you're listening to the KRFY 88.5 Morning Show with hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. A couple announcements. We want to thank everyone who helped make the recent 88.5 KRFY Community Radio Membership Drive a success. Thanks to all the event organizers, site donors, musicians, refreshment donors, broadcasters, greeters, phone bank answerers, set up and take down crews, sound engineer, technical helpers, and all new members and renewing members. So that's simply everyone. Thanks for helping make KRFY Community Radio viable and strong. You all are sincerely appreciated. And if you didn't get a chance to donate during the membership drive, you can become a new member or renew your membership through our secure PayPal donation button at the KRFY.org website, or you can send a membership check to KRFY at P.O. Box 2465, Sandpoint, Idaho, 83864. And thank you for that. I want to say a special shout out to Jesse Gunn from Pinky House Studios. He was there at the membership drive 2 days nonstop helping engineer the awesome music presentation that we were able to have. I know that the many, many musicians and musical groups that came in were very appreciative to have a good sound guy on hand. So thank you, Jesse Gunn, for that.
And you know, we did have a good sound guy. I was listening online over the air as well as in person to some of the acts, and the sound quality was great. So thank you to Jesse.
And
good work to the whole crew. You guys did a great job.
It was a lot of fun. And so what's coming up tomorrow? We have a special KRFY morning show.
Yeah, we have an extra bonus edition of our KRFY morning show tomorrow, Wednesday. Jim Healy will be hosting it at 8 o'clock. He'll be interviewing Debbie Love. She's executive director of the Pondre Arts Council, and she'll be talking about Art Walk. Art Walk is kicking off on Friday. It's a kind of a traditional event in Sandpoint now. It's an opportunity to cruise around through all the art galleries, see art by local artists. And it's a terrific event. Debbie will be talking about that tomorrow at 8 a.m. Then at 9 a.m., Jim will be interviewing Dino Wallace. She's executive director of the festival at Sandpoint. And she'll be talking about the artists who are going to be performing at this year's festival. And we have the festival has a heck of a good lineup with acts including Lake Street Dive, Arlo Guthrie, there's a very classic musician, Wilco, Ziggy Marley, Trampled by Turtles, and Vince Gill, along with the Spokane Symphony, of course. So that will be a great interview tomorrow. That's at 9 o'clock a.m. here on 88.5 KRFY.
And next week on the Tuesday edition of the morning show, it's going to be our June edition of Garden Talk. So, Chris, you will not be here, but my friend Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Produce and Pat Wentworth from the Community Gardens will be here. And we talk about all kinds of things interesting to gardening and also cooking. We always usually have one recipe, like what do you do right now with all of the greens that are coming up? What can you do with arugula besides eat it as a salad? There's probably arugula soup that's coming up on the menu.
It's the natural connection to the garden, right?
Exactly. So we'll have that next Tuesday.
We did skip over the fact on Thursday. Yes, the Thursday morning show is going to have Jack Peterson and Jim Healy hosting, and their guest will be Kim Queen from the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. That's at 8 o'clock a.m. on Thursday. So a lot of stuff coming up over the air here the next few days, Susie.
Mm-hmm.
And happening around town, again, the Chafe 150 is happening on Saturday. We talked about that a little earlier. And as always, there's a ton of things going on between now and Saturday. Here's something of interest tonight. The Kinixu Land Trust is kicking off its trail running series. And this is something that they're going to be holding regularly during the summer. And this will be at this will be a 10K run that's going to occur at the Western Pleasure Guest Ranch at 6 p.m. Start time is 6 p.m. And then again on July 28th, there's going to be a 15K run as part of this series. Now, you can get more information about this at the KinixuLandTrust.org. It's a trail running series. It's going to be a lot of fun for folks that like to run.
Mm-hmm. That is a good thing, and I know why they're doing that, because Eric Grace, their director, is a runner. And he probably said, let's have a race series.
Yeah.
So it's just, we're out of time, Chris. Guess what? All of this information can be found on the KRFY.org website. We have a community calendar that we received from Sandpoint Online. So thank you to Sandpoint Online for that. You can find these calendars. There's so much going on. We have such an awesome community. We are going to hear a little bit of the Young Rascals groovin'. So hope you have a great day, Chris.
Yeah, you too, Susie.
And everyone out there in KRFY listening land.
Enjoy the summer.
You bet.